Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to tonight's edition of Students for Better Future Radio. I'm your host, Doreen LaGuardia-Finkel, with Ruben Torres, and we have a great show for you tonight, and we are live. And folks, that was Ariana Grande. She was singing the national anthem, and we're going to be doing that often on the show. In recent events of the so-called boycotts of Black Lives Matter, I have discussed this with my host Ruben in the past, and we have talked about this, and we have thought that, you know, pretty much something like this should be, football is entertainment, and there's always a time and place for this kind of stuff. And we have said that this does not belong in football. You have the right to peacefully protest, but you know what, folks? I mean, there's times and places for this. And the National Football League probably should have stepped in. I don't know why they didn't. Maybe Ruben, you can elaborate on that a little bit.
Yeah, I will. I will. I believe the NFL there's the highest percentage of African Americans are playing in football, about 70%. So I believe they have become themselves involved politically in this politically correct environment. So that's the reason they're taking that position, because most of their players are African Americans. So it's unfortunate that they have taken that position.
Sports is entertainment, you know, and it was always the one place where people went and they got away from all this chaos in life. And
right
now, you know, they go there and they see stuff like this, Black Lives Matter and the whole thing. And I want to elaborate on that a little bit. There is a group called Black Lives Matter. Everybody has the right to protest. But the better way of doing it is to do something that includes everybody, like all lives matter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because sometimes the hatred is directed in the wrong avenue.
One of the
go ahead, Ruben.
I'm sorry, Doreen. One of the points that I've always I always bring up in any interview or any of the shows that we've done is that if we're going to discuss the situation of Black Lives Matter, we have to focus on the inner cities. For example, Chicago, in the south side of Chicago, every weekend there's 30, 40 people who get shot, 10 people who get killed. Where is Black Lives Matter there? They're nowhere to be found. So if we really want to focus on Black Lives Matter, let's start with the inner cities.
And two, there's a right, and there's a when it's black on black crime, nobody reports that either.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of have to address this as a society as a whole. And in a few minutes, folks, we're going to be taking callers because I already see the line coming in. The line's coming in, but I want to get onto tonight's subject. We've been 8 years with Barack Obama and what I call the Communist Manifesto, if you want to say, meaning this, the socialist policies that have really drained the middle class and that, you know, brought our taxes up high. I mean, I know here in New Jersey, I mean, my God, we're at 13,000 now, you know, and it's, you know, you ask yourself, where's all this money going to? And I think, and I want to tell everybody tonight that it's kind of time for a change. And we want to bring some new blood in and, you know, I am favoring Donald Trump because he is a, he comes from the business field, okay? He's bringing some new ideas in. And he's not a part of the establishment. And I think it's time that this country looks for this kind of change. And our guest, I'm going to introduce him. He's Dr. Murray Sabrin. He has written a book called Tax-Free 2000, correct, Dr. Sabrin?
That's correct, Doreen.
And he'll be joining us tonight. He's going to be discussing Trump's policies and what life will be like within the next 4 years if we get a Trump presidency. Welcome to the show, Dr. Sabrin.
Well, thank you, Doreen. It's a pleasure being with you.
Hello, Murray.
How are you, Ruben?
Yeah. okay, I want to go with the economy first. I want to bring some issues up here. Over the past 7 years, 14 million people have left the economy. And I want to ask you, Dr. Sabrin, how does Donald Trump plan to get them back?
Well, before we get into the specifics, I just want to go over a few of the things that happened last night, which as we were talking before the show began, Donald had an opportunity to score huge points, given what Hillary said about a lot of things. And he didn't take the opening, and he fell into a trap, which was unfortunate because a lot of people are criticizing him for what happened. So let me just discuss what happened. Hillary gave Donald the biggest opening last night when she said, by having that private server that she used when she was Secretary of State was a mistake. Trump should have come back and said, when did you realize it was a mistake? The first day you had it, the first week, the first month, the first year, or after 4 years? In other words, if you realized it was a mistake, when did you realize it? And we know that you didn't stop the private server when you were Secretary of State, so obviously you thought you could get away by having a private server where all your email correspondence would be monitored by you and your people, and it would never see the light of day if it wasn't exposed. So this was a great opportunity for Trump to say, how can someone who is head of the State Department of the United States government have a private server when, in private business, if you're the president of a division of a conglomerate, which is what the federal government is, this huge $4 trillion conglomerate, and you were a president of a division in a private company, and you had a private server in violation of corporate rules, you would be not only fired, you would probably be sued because you probably have exposed proprietary information of the company. And we know Hillary Clinton's server had top secret and classified information And who knows who has it? The Chinese, the Koreans, the Russians, the ISIS. So not only was she extremely reckless, as the FBI director said, but she violated the law. And for the FBI director to say that she didn't, because she didn't have intent, her actions indicated what her intent was: to evade scrutiny by having a private server that was unsecured. So this was a mind-boggling event that Hillary Clinton undertook, and Donald Trump didn't take advantage of it. And, of course, Lester Holt didn't even ask her a question about it, or if he did, she just glossed over it. So this was something that he should concentrate on the second and third debate and keep hammering home that, do we want a president that the FBI director said was extremely careless in handling sensitive information? That, to me, is something that every military person in the United States realizes, because if they did it, they would be in jail. If someone less than the Secretary of State did it, they would be indicted for violating the statutes that govern the care of classified information. So the double standard in Washington, D.C. is incredibly large, and the hypocrisy is great. When she said she apologized, she wouldn't do it again. Well, she already did it. It shows her judgment is terrible, that she circumvented the rules that she signed off on, that she would use a government server for her public business. So this was another example of the Clintons thumbing their nose not only at the American people but at the justice system, and the FBI's credibility is totally shot. Because when I heard FBI Director Comey in his press conference lay out the case against Hillary Clinton, I said to myself, he's going to call for her to be indicted. And then he said, no, she's not going to be indicted, which is really incredible, which is not his call. That call was the Justice Department's call. All he had to do was lay out the evidence, which he did wonderfully, but he basically punted. And the question is, why did he punt? And some people explain that he didn't want to indict a presidential candidate. Well, that shows that she's above the law. If you commit a crime in America, no matter who you are, President Nixon was driven from office because apparently mm-hmm. he violated the law.
Mm-hmm.
And so right. If a president who violated the law is impeached and resigns because he didn't want to go to trial in the U.S. Senate, then Hillary Clinton should be indicted and let a grand jury of her peers decide if she was guilty or not guilty of violating the statute governing the handling of classified information. That's just one thing that Trump should have done. The other thing he did, which I applauded him, and he didn't continue it, was to talk about the Federal Reserve's policy of the last 8 years with QE1,
right.
QE2, QE3, which is the biggest subsidy to Wall Street and the top 1% of the income earners in this country. And Trump could have said, Hillary Clinton supports a policy which redistributes income from Main Street to Wall Street, and she's content that senior citizens are getting zero on their savings that they worked all their life to put in the bank to earn 3%, 4%, 5%, where they've been getting zero. And he should have said, this is shameful on Hillary Clinton's part that she supports a policy of Yellen and Bernanke and others who've been head of the Federal Reserve that have manipulating interest rates, giving us these bubbles, and therefore she's part of the problem. She's not part of the solution. So that's another area that Trump should have hammered her home on. Of course, the other issue that he did but didn't follow through was the wars in the Middle East that she was part and parcel of the last 8 years, actually longer than that. She voted for the Iraq War, and he pointed out correctly that these wars have cost us trillions of dollars that have been used for rebuilding our infrastructure and giving us tax cuts and other things that have made life better in the United States. And the other point that he fell into a trap was when Lester Holt opened the debate by saying, we're going to cover three issues: jobs and the economy, national security, and crime and race relations. And he asked Donald Trump about the birther issue. Well, that's not part of those three categories. And Trump should have said, thank you for that question, but I've already answered that. Let's get on to the next line of business, which is where this country is headed, since most people are not happy about the direction of this country. That's what he should have pivoted. Rather than answering the question, You answer the question the way
that
you want, not
like
the way.
That was almost like a setup question.
It definitely was a setup question. And the other thing he should have talked about, and presidential candidates get sucked into this, is not a federal issue. Murder, robbery, these are local issues and state issues. These are the responsibility of police chiefs, mayors, town council, governors, state legislatures, community leaders, and the public. It's not the federal government's responsibility to make sure that Camden and Newark and Jersey City are safe for the people to walk the streets. That's the responsibility of the local elected officials. And Trump should have said, we've been trying to nationalize every issue in America, and it doesn't work, and that's why we have a $20 trillion debt, a $210 trillion unfunded liability, and this is why the government has taken on more and more responsibility, and look what it's given us. And Hillary Clinton is part of the problem, not part of the solution. So,
yeah,
Trump,
hold on, Dr. Shamer. If you look at Trump's economy, his policies, they sort of make sense, but I guess it just wasn't projected well last night.
Well, they didn't really talk – well, they talked about his tax cut plan, and I always applaud tax cuts because as the author of Tax Free 2000, showing how we can have a tax-free society, I'm interested in supporting somebody that gets us closer to that goal, which he does a little bit in his plan by getting rid of the estate tax, which is one of the worst taxes ever created by governments.
Right.
He's talking about lowering the corporate income tax, lowering individual income taxes. I didn't see anything in his plan to get rid of the alternative minimum tax, which is a horrendous tax on individuals. It's sucking more and more middle-class people into higher tax brackets by eliminating deductions that they're entitled to. Then the government takes it back when you fill out your tax form. So these are the things that Trump should emphasize, that tax cuts are good economically and they're good philosophically because it gets us toward a free society, a free economy. And a free economy is a more prosperous economy than what we've had the last 8 years. And I would say the last 30 years in America.
Doreen and Maria, I tell you, I don't think looking at Donald's tax plan and his whole economic plan, I don't think he followed that, his plan yesterday. He should have been promoting that. I mean, when Hillary came at him saying that he was, you know, he wanted to follow or continue the Republican policies of trickle down economy, the Ronald Reagan model, he should have came out and said, no, I'm reducing taxes across the board, like my plan said, especially for working and middle income Americans. He did not specify that. He got caught up in not going after her when she said he's only going to help his buddies, the rich folks.
Well,
people that he knows.
It's worse than that. When you cut taxes, that's not trickle down economics. That's common sense. What Hillary Clinton is proposing is trickle-down economics, where she wants, quote, the rich to pay their fair share, like if they're not paying enough money today in taxes. And what are they getting for it? Virtually nothing. Here in New Jersey, we pay a lot of taxes, my wife and I, and we've never had children, and we're paying income taxes and school property taxes, and we don't get any benefit from that. That's money that we can't use for our own retirement savings or more money that we could use for philanthropy. And we've been very philanthropic the last 10 years in New Jersey. And so people don't realize there's an opportunity cost when the government takes more money from you, more money from businesses. That means businesses have less money to reinvest, less money to pay dividends, less money to pay higher wages. So Hillary Clinton is the typical left-wing politician like Bernie Sanders who only understands one thing, spend other people's money, spend, and hopefully we'll get a good outcome. And that's been a failure throughout human history. And Trump should say trickle-down economics is what the left-wingers in America have been practicing for 100 years now. And he should hammer that point in the next debate and in the third debate and point out that only people who have capital can hire other people and invest in plant and equipment. low-income people, minimum-wage workers, don't hire people. And minimum-wage laws, of course, prevent young people, unskilled young people, particularly in the inner city, from getting that first job so they can learn the skills so they can climb up the economic ladder. And Hillary Clinton wants to expand it to $15 an hour. And this is an example of economic illiteracy run amok in Washington. And unfortunately,
right.
Republicans have not done anything to roll back the welfare state, which is hurting the very people it's supposed to help. This has been documented for the past 50 years with the Great Society program. The rate of poverty is the same as it is today as it was back in 1960. And if you look at the statistics, before President Johnson declared a war on poverty in 1964-65, the poverty rate was declining in the post-war period as companies were investing, as capital was coming to America, because this was the great land of opportunity. Even though we had high marginal tax rates, it was only for the super wealthy. And most people never paid those high tax rates because there were a lot of tax deductions, credits, and so on and so forth, which lowered people's tax liability. And so those official rates of up to 94% were not paid by anyone because people used the tax code for their advantage. Today, there are very few deductions for the average family. And so we have to go back to a much simpler time with the tax code. Trump should have pointed out, America had tremendous prosperity from 1788, the beginning of the Republic, and through 1913 when we didn't have an income tax. And even the economy has grown for the past 100 years with the income tax, the point I would make, could you imagine how much more economic growth we would have if we didn't have an income tax and people could keep their own money and save and invest for their families and for their small businesses? So if you want to achieve the goals that Hillary Clinton says she wants, then you have to follow the basic rules of economics and finance. People who earn the money should keep the money in order to better themselves
reinvest
and their families.
Well, the thing is that the Trump plan reduces the current 7 tax brackets to 3 brackets. And also, he should have promoted that. He should have indicated that the 3.8% Obamacare tax on investment income will be repealed. And also the AMT would be something that he will repeal. All those things he should have brought up.
Yep.
He did not. I was very disappointed in that.
Well, this is because when you are in a debate, and I was in several debates when I ran for governor in 1997, I ran for the U.S. Senate several times, you have to answer the question the way you want to get your agenda out, you want to get your points out. So you have to take the question and give a very short response to it, and then get into your proposals. So whatever the question is, and say, to make America more prosperous, to make the American people more prosperous, we need to cut taxes. And the other point he made is regulation. He should have pointed out that there are 70,000, 80,000 pages in the Federal Register which govern our behavior as citizens and as business owners in America. What good does that do? To throw back to Clinton, do you know how these regulations hurt the small businesses you say you're in favor of? Businesses don't have the means to spend so much time on all these regulations. They have to hire accountants and attorneys and specialists to go through the maze of regulations. And then that's just the federal. What about the state and local regulations? So this discourages a lot of people from forming businesses because they say, this is too much work. Not only do I have to get customers, not only do I have to work with suppliers, but I've got to maneuver through all these rules and regulations, and I don't have the time to do it. Most people start a business, work 12, 14 hours a day, 6, 7 days a week, just to get customers so they can pay their employees and their rent and all the other things. It is hard having a business, and this is a point I stress to my students constantly. It's nice to be a business owner, but if you really want to have a successful business for the long term, you've got to put in the time and effort and energy in order to do that. And Hillary Clinton has never met a payroll. She's never created a job. She's never worked in the private sector except briefly in the law firm where she was basically a figurehead in the law firm. Her goal was to have a political career as Bill Clinton was, to move up the ladder he did. Now she's trying to follow in his footsteps. And God help the country if she becomes president, because I can tell you one of the things that she would do as president is to create an enemies list. And the thing is, she is a very vengeful, spiteful person, and she would take any criticism of her as president and turn it into a vendetta against talk show hosts, bloggers on the internet, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we are possibly entering a period, if she becomes president, where authoritarianism is the rule in Washington, D.C. And that's why, even though I'm not a great Trump supporter, I didn't support him in the primary, his goal is to make sure that Hillary doesn't get into the White House. And then now we can talk about what Trump may or may not do. That's because I've seen presidents in my lifetime. I've read about presidents in the history books. They promise one thing during the campaign, and when they get elected or reelected, they do just the opposite. Let me give you some examples. 1916, President Wilson is running for his second term. The war is raging in Europe, the Great War. And he says, because the American people don't want to be sucked into a war in Europe, we will not send American boys to Europe. 6 months after the election, he declares war on Germany and we're in World War I. In 1932, FDR is running against the incumbent Herbert Hoover, who presides over the collapse of the stock market and the implosion of the economy. And he tries to get us out of it by his increased spending, higher taxes. And FDR promises that we're going to return to fiscal stability and sanity, cut spending, cut taxes, and restore the gold standard. And what does he come in? He comes into office in 1933 when he's inaugurated. He takes the American people off of gold, spends wildly, increases regulation, and the American economy for the first time in U.S. history is in a depression for a full decade. 1940, he's running for the unprecedented third term. He says American boys are not going to fight in Europe. Remember, the war starts in August, September of 1939. The American people don't want to get sucked into another European war. Of course, he maneuvers the fleet to get into Pearl Harbor, where it's bombed by the Japanese on December 7th, and as they say, the rest is history. Fast forward to 1964, another Democratic president, Lyndon Johnson, runs for a full term after he takes over after the Kennedy assassination, and he says American boys are not going to go to Southeast Asia to fight against the North Vietnamese because that is basically a civil war between the North and the South. Guess what? 6 months after he takes the oath of office in January of 1965, in July of 1965, he calls for 100,000 troops to go to Vietnam, and 10 years later, we get out of Vietnam, accomplishing nothing except 58,000 American troops dead, hundreds of thousands of wounded, and 2 million or so Vietnamese dead. This is a shameful episode of American history. Fast forward to 1988. George Bush gets the nomination. He famously says in his acceptance speech, "Read my lips, no new taxes." He gets into office, and the Democrats sucker him, and he signs off on a big tax increase. 1992, Bill Clinton is elected. What does he promise? A middle-class tax cut. What's the first thing happens? Taxes go up by one vote, and the Republicans take control of Congress in 1994. And then, of course, in the State of the Union address in 1996, Bill Clinton famously says, "The era of big government is over." The Republicans stand as one in the Congress and applaud him wildly. The Democrats sit on their hands, not saying anything. And, of course, that was a big lie. Government kept on growing and growing and growing. 2000, George W. Bush says in the debates, "We must have a humble foreign policy. We cannot be the policemen of the world." In effect, he says that. And, of course, what happens? We go into Iraq, even though Iraq is no threat to the American people or national security. In fact, in the first Gulf War, if you recall, the U.S. ambassador to Iraq, April Glaspie, spoke to Saddam Hussein and told him that your dispute with Kuwait, because Kuwait was drilling horizontally and hitting the Iraqi oil fields and sucking the Iraq oil out of the ground, and April Glaspie said, "Your dispute with Kuwait is not our business." And guess what happens 8 months later? Desert Storm. We go into Iraq, to kick and Kuwait to kick Saddam Hussein out, and through a series of events, what happens? The World Trade Center in 2001, and we're now bogged down in the Middle East for the past 15 years with no end in sight. This is the shameful record of both Republicans and Democrats on foreign policy. But Hillary Clinton gave us the current mess in Syria and Libya because she has bought into the neocon notion that we can spread democracy in the Mideast, just as Woodrow Wilson thought we could spread democracy after World War I with the League of Nations. These are failed policies. And Trump was correct to point out that the people who endorsed Hillary Clinton, he called them 50 political hacks, which I was applauding when he said that, because these are the people, all they care about is war and war and war, not diplomacy, but war and war and war. And it seems that one of the most important statements made by a Republican president at the end of his two terms was Dwight Eisenhower, when he said we should be wary of the military-industrial complex, which both Republicans and Democrats support. So again, from a partisan point of view, yes, I'm a registered Republican, but as a lot of Republicans have in the past, we've been gravely disappointed by George Bush, by George W. H. Bush, and even Reagan raised taxes in the two terms that he was president, and he really didn't roll back federal government. In fact, what was his one of his campaign promises? To get rid of the Department of Education and Department of Energy. Guess what? They're still here. So even Ronald Reagan, with the support that he had and a landslide victory in 1984 against Mondale, couldn't roll back two cabinet departments which had no business being created in the first place. They were created by Democrats. So why, when Republicans have the power, why can't they roll back Democrats' programs that are totally destructive of education and energy?
Because the reality, Doreen and Barry, is that in Washington, special interest groups control the politicians. That's the bottom line. I mean, they basically are there promoting something, but in reality, they don't have any power. It's the special interest groups and the powerful people, like the Soros and the Koch brothers. Those are the individuals that have. They will. A lot of power in D.C.
Well, here's the point, Ruben and Doreen. What we should have is term limits. Then people can vote their conscience rather than worrying about re-election after 6 years. We should have six terms for congressmen, maybe even four terms. But just to be there for a few years, no pension, go back and work in the private sector back home. And same thing with members of the Senate. They should serve one or two terms at most. And go back and work in your state. Being in Washington and Congress should not be a career choice for people. It should be where you do, quote, public service, which from my perspective, and I'm sure your perspective, is to roll back big government to a manageable level, which from my perspective is very small. It would be so small. Here's what I would love to see in my lifetime, that it doesn't matter who's president of the United States, because we are living in a world or in America where government is so irrelevant in our lives that people can create businesses, build their businesses, and not worry about the IRS or the Securities and Exchange Commission or all these other alphabet soup agencies that really terrorize the American people at home, at their workplace. And what we need is a society based upon respect of private property and individual rights.
Hold on, Dr. Sabourin. We do have callers on the line here. Caller 573, would you like to ask a question? Okay, how about caller 707? That's the area code. Do you want to ask a question? You're on the air. Okay, so either I'm not getting through or... but go ahead, I cut you off. Go ahead, Dr. Sabourin, continue.
No, the amazing thing is the words that you never see from Hillary Clinton's lips is freedom, liberty, individual rights. It's all about group rights, identity politics. And every time she speaks, I think she's running to be the head of the social welfare agency in America. That's not what the federal government is all about. And the other thing that personifies Hillary Clinton, she is the elementary school teacher no kid wanted to have as their teacher. She is just so annoying. Her voice drives me crazy. Her cadence is awful. And all she does is patronize and belittle her opponents. And it's interesting, last night, Trump called her Secretary Clinton. She called him Donald. That was very disrespectful, because if she's going to call him Donald, he should have called her Hillary, and they should have been on a first-name basis. This is her condescending tone, that she is part of the Eastern establishment elite, which the people in flyover country despise because they think that they're country bumpkins and don't know anything. But one of the great things about the Midwest is a lot of great businesses were created there. If you read the history of Michigan and Ohio and Indiana and Illinois, some of the great businesses that are still around were created there in the 19th century. These are very
small.
Maybe in New York State, Texas, right? There have been great businesses created in Colorado, Minnesota, and so on and so forth. So Hillary Clinton is the probably the most snobbish person ever to run for the presidency. And the fact that she's not winning overwhelmingly shows what a weak candidate she is. She barely beat Bernie Sanders. In fact, if the evidence shows, based upon the emails that were leaked, that Bernie Sanders did win California and other states. There was massive voter fraud. And so the Clintons will stoop to nothing to make sure that they win. It's all about winning, gaining power, getting money for their foundation. I mean, the fact that the Clinton Foundation was still operating while she was Secretary of State was a massive conflict of interest, a massive one. I don't know if it was illegal, but it was certainly unethical to have a foundation where your husband is raising money from governments that you're negotiating with. I mean, this is an incredible conflict of interest. And people in the media just brush it off as nothing is the matter. And when I hear people on CNBC and NBC and CNN and MSNBC say how trustworthy she is, this is mind-boggling. I mean, she is the least trustworthy person who ever held office in the United States. As First Lady, where she said she made $100,000 in cattle futures by reading the Wall Street Journal. She should have been hired by Goldman Sachs to make them billions if she could do that in the futures market. Nobody in the history of the futures market can make $100,000 in cattle futures by reading the Wall Street Journal. Because if she could do that, it would give her my money to manage so she could make me more money.
Yeah, hold on 1 second. Caller 248, you're live on the air. Would you like to ask something?
Yeah, I'd like to ask Dr. Murray a question.
Okay, go ahead.
Sure. Don't you think that Trump, he needs to immediately, when he gets into office, is start dealing with this free trade cheating? You know, that's the only way he's going to bring jobs back to this country. And that should be on his first agenda, in my opinion. What do you think?
Well, here's the point. NAFTA, which Bill Clinton signed, I believe, in 1994, is not a trade agreement, even though it has that in the title, the North American Free Trade Agreement. Anytime the government says something, the opposite is true. It's a managed trade agreement. It is 20,000 pages long. A free trade agreement is basically you open up your borders, we open up our borders. And since we have a lot of capital in America that should be repatriated because there's $2 trillion overseas, as Trump pointed out, and if they bring it back, it has to be it'll be taxed heavily under the current tax laws. So we need to reform the tax laws, reduce taxes so that money comes back, so we can build better plant and equipment in America, make workers more productive, that increases their wages. These trade agreements are nothing more than crony capitalism at its worst. The TPP is probably several thousand pages long. These are not free trade agreements. We have free trade between New Jersey and where Reuben lives in Texas. We don't have to worry about an agreement. We live in one geographic area called the United States of America. But even if we didn't have an agreement with Europe or South America, trade is about people exchanges. It's people trading with people. It's business trading with people. You don't need a trade agreement for free trade or free enterprise to occur. It happens naturally because we have the International Division of Labor. Texas provides us with beef. We provide whatever we sell to Texas, and everyone lives happily ever after. We don't have to worry about trade deficits between Texas and New Jersey. We don't have to worry about trade deficits between the United States and Mexico or trade deficits between the United States and China. That money has to be used because they're getting dollars for the goods that they're selling us, so they have to either invest it or buy goods from us. This whole notion of the trade deficit is a bogus economic concept. Hillary Clinton is totally clueless, and Trump is making some – this is where I think he's weakest at. What he should be saying is that these trade agreements are not in the best interest of the American people. They are for the interest of the political and financial elites of America, because most people don't read these trade agreements. They help ship jobs overseas. And the way we grow an economy is by investment. And when Hillary Clinton says the government is going to invest, that is an incorrect statement. Governments do not invest. Governments spend. People invest and corporations invest. Businesses invest by putting money into capital goods and other things in order to grow their business. So the notion when politicians say government has to invest in this, that, and the other thing, no, government spends the people's money on projects that may or may not have a value to the public. And that's why I call for a tax-free America, because then we will know exactly what the American people want when they vote with the dollars that they earn in order to get the things that they want, not what the politicians tell them they should want.
Yeah, because if they don't correct this, we're just going to keep losing our tax base.
Oh, there's no question about it.
On top of losing our jobs, what's happening right now is that countries are not really respecting us. They're taking us for granted because these past 8 years, Obama has not really taken and put country first.
No, he's letting them
He's allowed other countries to basically laugh at us and basically take us for granted.
Well, the point is, I would be in favor of even unilateral free trade as long as we have low taxes here. Capital would come to the United States. That money that's sitting offshore with Apple and other companies that have hundreds of billions of dollars overseas, if that money comes back, either not taxed or taxed at a very low rate, and I think Trump wants a 10% tax on that money coming in, that would probably be a big inducement for companies to bring money in and build plant and equipment in the United States rather than worrying about the rules and regulations overseas, because Europe has very onerous rules on investment. So where are companies investing? They're investing in Taiwan, Hong Kong, Singapore, these small city states in Eastern Europe. They have lower taxes than we do. These are former communist countries that have lower tax rates than the United States. Go figure, in the 21st century, former communist countries have lower taxes and less regulation than we do. You can't make this up. So if we want to call ourselves the land of the free, the land of free enterprise, let's have a free enterprise economy with much lower taxes. And that could be done very easily if Trump wins and he has Republican control of the Congress. He can get most of his economic agenda through, which would create a big bonanza. The problem that he said is that the Fed is playing around with interest rates, because if you listen to Janet Yellen's press conference last week, she said, we're going to raise rates by the end of the year. Well, it's nearly the end of the year. What are you waiting for? There's a thing called the election. If rates go up, the stock market's probably going to have a huge hiccup, and we could see a 5, 10, 15% correction. I don't know what it would be, but that would not be good for Hillary Clinton, because she said, incredibly, you cannot criticize the Fed. The Fed is above criticism. I've never heard a politician say you cannot criticize an agency that was created by the government. Where does it say that you cannot criticize the Federal Reserve? The Fed is not independent. This is bogus. The Fed creates policy based upon what they think is politically acceptable. And because of the Great Recession, they have kept rates artificially low for 8 years. this is going to, we are in possibly the biggest bubble in American history, and we won't know of the outfall of it until the bubble is bursting, and that's going to happen somewhere down the road. I'm not smart enough to know when that occurs, but I look at the economic data and financial data all the time, and we're still months and months away from it, maybe possibly a year or two. But right now, the bubble is not going to burst as long as the Fed keeps interest rates low and they don't raise them precipitously, which could happen in 2017, 2018.
Mary, I have a question for you. I have a question in regards to the market, because I follow the market. There's just not a bubble within the market. There's also a bubble with the automobile industry. There's also a bubble within the housing industry. So it's not just a bubble that really only deals directly with the market, the stock market. Other areas, other sectors are going to be impacted when the major crash in the market, especially if it happens also in China. That's going to have a ripple effect. That's going to have a ripple effect, not just on the U.S., but on the whole global economy.
Oh, there's no question about it. That's why I've been telling students, and when I go out and speak, people should be raising cash, keeping as much cash as they're comfortable with, either in a money market account at a bank or keeping it in a safe place out of a bank. Because you never know what's going to happen. We saw what happened in Greece. They closed the banks and people got a haircut on their savings deposits. This has happened throughout the world where governments have taken people's money, confiscated a part of people's cash deposits, the savings deposits and checking deposits. So you've got to be ever vigilant about what's happening around the world and how it could impact us. So now is not the time to engage in a big party because the good times could be ending. And for a lot of people, it's not good times. Some people are working for a lot less than they did years ago. They have a lot of debt still. And so people have been lulled into thinking that this is a good economy because the unemployment rate is under 5%. But if you look at the broad unemployment rate of people who are discouraged from looking for work, but people who are working part-time and would like to work full-time, that number is around 10%. And some people think it's even higher. The question is, what is the real unemployment in the United States? And if you go to many communities around the country, you see strip malls that are partly empty. You have large unemployment numbers in some communities around the country. People are underemployed. They have PhDs or MBAs. And they're working in jobs that are well below their skills. So there is a lot of pain out there. And amazingly, Hillary Clinton still doesn't get it. Donald Trump gets it to some degree. I wish he would be more articulate on these issues by pointing out that we've tried this experiment for 100 years of trickle-down government spending and regulation. He got to it to some degree, but he hasn't addressed the spending issue. He did talk about spending when it comes to military spending, but he did say he wants to build up the military. The last thing we need is more money going into the Pentagon because we are spending more than the next 10 countries combined in the world on the military. And our military is not for defensive purposes, but we have troops in 130 countries. We have 900 bases around the world. And who is going to threaten us? We have the mightiest military in the history of the world. No one is going to threaten us. Our borders are porous at the southern border, and instead of worrying about the borders overseas, we should be worrying about our borders here at home, and Trump should make that a key component of the second debate and point out Hillary Clinton wants open borders. She wants just sanctuary cities. She wants a legal path to immigration, and when I campaigned, I said, no, if you are here illegally, you should go back to your home country. And, of course, if you commit a crime and you're illegal, you're going to be deported. But if you're here illegally, you cannot think you forfeited your right to become a U.S. citizen. You are essentially a guest visitor in America. You could work. You could open up a business. You could be just like any other American, but you cannot get citizenship, and you will not be able to vote. The Democrats want to bring in more voters, more immigrants, legally and illegally, that will give them more voters at the polls. Because we changed the immigration laws in the United States, so we're getting more individuals from third world countries close to Europe, and so we're changing the demographic character of the United States, which is having profound impact on our culture. Just as we're seeing what happens when you get this mass migration into Germany, into Scandinavia, it's changing the culture of those countries. And multiculturalism sounds nice, but there are costs involved in trying to integrate various cultures under one roof called a country. And so these are things that have to be discussed in a civil, honest, open way, as opposed to demonizing anyone that wants to have an immigration policy that doesn't make the country much different than what it was 5, 10, 20 years ago.
Right, but Dr. Sabin, what does all this do to, for example, education and healthcare, or this massive immigration that we're talking about?
Well, if your people are coming in who are poor and looking for better opportunities, which, of course, I'm an immigrant. My parents came here with very little money after they barely survived World War II. But they didn't come here for a government handout. They didn't even think of that. We got help from a Jewish social service agency. My father went to work right away, and that's the way we built up a life in America. So immigrants who are coming here, they should be vetted to make sure they're not carrying tuberculosis, Zika, or other highly contagious diseases. Who knows what diseases are coming? What diseases people have coming in illegally at the southern border, or even the northern border, or even through Kennedy and Newark airports. So we have to have a process where we make sure that the public health is priority number one, that the borders are secure. We don't have to build a wall. We can do it in a way that is remember, a wall works two ways. Not only does it keep people out, it also keeps people in. We had a wall between East Berlin and West Berlin, which is a symbol of Soviet communist tyranny. So I'm not in favor of a wall, but we have to have a mechanism to make sure that people come here. But it puts huge pressure on cities that have high illegal immigration, because if people don't have insurance, they're going to flock to the emergency room in hospitals with all sorts of illnesses that are putting pressure on healthcare costs in America. So we have to have some common sense when you approach these issues, whether it's in education. There must be some school districts in Texas and in Arizona and New Mexico, Southern California, which are just bursting at the seams because of illegal immigration. So these are real costs to the taxpayers. And Trump should say, I am running for president to put taxpayers first, not illegal immigrants. That's a home run issue.
Well, so,
right. Go ahead,
Mary,
Ruben.
Mary, I thank you, Doreen. Mary, I think he also missed out on something that really got me very upset. When initially they had brought up regarding energy, and Hillary Clinton came up and said, well, we need to put more solar panels out there because that's going to create jobs. I would have came back if I was Donald Trump, and I would have said, yes, for the past 7.5 years, Obama's administration, which were part of it, had Solyndra. All these solar panel companies that have gone into bankruptcy, millions and millions of dollars, taxpayer money, gone to waste.
Yep. This is a problem with Hillary Clinton. She's a central planner. She should be running for president of North Korea rather than the president of the United States of America.
Yeah.
She talked to virtually every sentence that she uttered when she was asked the question is, I have a plan for this, I have a plan for that. I was waiting for her to say, I have a 5-year plan, and Trump should have said, are you running for the president of the Soviet Union? They had a lot of 5-year plans. They all failed.
She's running for president to be the mayor of Baghdad. That's what she's running for.
Well, the thing is, she's really ignorant on economics. She's incredibly ignorant. All it is soundbites to get the so-called soccer moms with more government-paid, taxpayer-paid daycare and all these other social welfare programs. And I would say Hillary, you took an oath as United States Senator to defend the Constitution. Can you tell me where it's authorized in the Constitution that the government engage in all these programs? And she would say, well, the General Welfare Clause. No, specifically, Article 1, Section 8 outlines the specific responsibilities and activities of the federal government. It doesn't say anything about social welfare or anything related to government subsidizing businesses or corporate welfare or anything like that. And Trump should say, yes, we're going to get rid of corporate welfare, which means that to do the best way to do that is to make sure that companies have the capital from the free market to do that by lowering tax rates. So they don't have to go to the government to get bailed out. The marketplace will tell us who's going to be successful or not successful. That's the free enterprise system. It's a profit and loss system. Trump, again, he went to Wharton School. I don't know what he learned there, and he's been in business for a long time, but he should articulate basic economic and financial principles I teach in the classroom. And if you do that, just in a matter-of-fact way, he speaks like he's talking to an eighth grader or a high school student anyway, but he should use words that have very specific meaning of how an economy grows. And it doesn't grow because the government spends more money. See, that's the myth that Trump should hammer her on. Government spending does not grow the economy. It's capital investment that grows the economy by having low taxes, less regulation that would give entrepreneurs the capital to grow the economy and not have these onerous tax rates and burden on businesses and individuals. And that's all he has to say. He doesn't go into great detail about it, but just articulate the vision of America that's going to make the economy great again, as he says he wants to do.
Do we have enough votes, if he gets in, to actually repeal Obamacare?
Well, see, this is the disappointment of Republicans. If you go back and you look at 1953, the first year of the Eisenhower administration, a lot of Republicans or members of the grassroots thought that Eisenhower was going to come in and start to repeal the New Deal after 20 years of the New Deal. It didn't happen. In fact, Eisenhower expanded the welfare state by creating the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare. So you've got to understand, Republicans don't turn back the big government programs of the Democrats. They basically cement them into place. And Bush too, what did he do? And Bush won before him, and Reagan before him, and Nixon before him. They expanded the welfare state with No Child Left Behind, with prescription drugs. And Nixon was a liberal on economic and social policy. He gave us a lot of big government agencies. And he got rid of the last link between the dollar and gold, and the dollar purchasing power since 1971 has declined by 80%. So, again, Republicans have been incredible disappointments, not only when they govern, but when they appoint people to the Supreme Court. Look at Justice Roberts. He was the deciding vote in Obamacare. He was supposed to be the guardian of limited government and fiscal conservatism, and he turned his back on these principles because he didn't want to go down in history as someone who helped repeal a landmark piece of legislation. That's not what the justices should be doing. They should be doing what is constitutional, and there's nothing in the constitutional that gives the government authority to force people to buy health care. That's the bottom line.
Right. Okay, Dr. Sabourin, we're actually out of time. Do you have a website where people can find out some more information?
Yes, murraysabourin.com, and we have a great event coming up a week from tonight at Ramapo College. Professor Joe Solano from Pace University will be talking about the Fed and money and banking, and his topic is why falling prices are good for business. And if you can't attend in person, if you go to the link that's on the website, you'll be able to live stream the event at 7:30 on October 4th. This is going to be a great talk by Professor Salerno. One of my colleagues and I will be discussing Joe's ideas after he makes his presentation. So that's next Tuesday, October 4th. at murraysabrin.com. You can find the link to RSVP or see the show live or the presentation live.
Yes, and also Dr. Sabrin, if you can send me the link.
Okay, absolutely.
Yeah, I'll put it up on our website as well, studentsforbetterfuture.com, and it will be up in the queue when you turn go to the website immediately under events. You'll see it appear there. And I'll make sure I get that out for everyone.
Terrific. Thank you, Doreen.
But folks, yes,
thank
we're
you,
out
Mary.
Of time.
Thank you, Ruben.
And,
it's been great.
Yes, Dr. Sabrin, thank you very much for joining us. Folks, for next week, I want to mention a few things. We are training some new hosts. I believe one has joined us tonight. And if you're interested in being a host, you can contact me at studentsforbetterfuture@outlook.com. And we're going to be talking about human trafficking and the upcoming election.
I'm also working on getting a couple of new guests.
Yes, we have lots of guests coming, so stay tuned for the upcoming weeks. And for everybody, good night from all of us over here. Thank you.
All right, have a great one. Thank you, Doreen.